Welcome to Tip Top, growing up your business with Metronomics. We will be talking with business thought leaders, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and business team coaches who have all taken the journey to grow up their businesses to their tip top. We'll be sharing strategies, systems, and stories on how you can grow up your company at the speed you want. If you are searching for your path to the tip top and feel your time is running out, then this podcast is for you. I'm your host, Shannon Susco. Welcome, everyone. I have Ben Tyndale with me today. I don't really even want to give you much of background on Ben because there's a lot to learn about Ben and his experience. But his most recent experience up to today is he's the managing director of accounts at JLL for the last 17 years. And what a journey Ben has had in that organization. But that doesn't stop there. Ben's had lots of great experience across different organizations worldwide. Very, very interesting journey, lots to talk about, and lots of learning. So with that, Ben, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Great to be here. Thanks, Shannon.
I'm really glad. We've definitely not met before today, but I know that you have had a chance to read Three Hag Way and Metronomics, which is near and dear to my heart. But also, you know, you're a great learner of from leadership to strategy to all those things. And so where I'd love to start is just tell us a little bit about, even before you got to your managing director position today, What was a bit of your journey to end up there for the last 17 years?
My journey's been characterized by a couple of different things, but it's been very global. It's been all about growth and learning, actually. And it's also been about just the people that I worked with, right? I've been very lucky like that. So I actually joined JLL in Shanghai, 2005. And then with JLL, I've been moved from Shanghai to Singapore to London and then back to Sydney. So obviously really global and works with lots of teams all over the world. So very, very lucky. But I think what I've enjoyed the most, in addition to the people, is the learning side, right? So we do a lot of real estate outsourcing. So I would sit in, you know, a giant FMCG firm's office for 5 years with their badge and see how they thought about marketing, or a giant technology firm. And how did they think about creating new products?
Right.
So that opportunity has been fantastic.
Yeah. What attracted you, like, how'd you end up at JLL? Like, what attracted you in the beginning? And then honestly, you know, you said lots of learning, you said the people, right, for 17 years. But was there anything else? We know today so many leaders definitely don't spend 17 years in an organization. Like, that's just not a thing anymore. I know you know that too. So I'd love to just, like, take me through a little bit of your thinking along the way.
Sure thing. So I will say, when I joined JLL, I was reacting to a lot of the bad experiences that I'd had before, right? So I worked for a solar power startup, which was fantastic, straight out of university, Sydney and San Francisco, that went bust. And then, because we couldn't get third round VC funding.
Right.
And then I worked for a construction company in Cambodia. And what I learned from those two was I wanted something with a little more stability and a little more runway where I could learn leadership. I could learn the principles of how to really run a good business. Right. And I found that in spades with JLL, right? And the way that I thought about this was, when I was in Shanghai, I just finished studying Chinese at uni. I took a year off. And I pulled out the last 10 years of the Fortune 500 list, and I counted up each of the industries and which ones have been the most stable, right? So which ones had the most you know, elements on the Fortune 500 for the longest time. And real estate came at the top of the list. So then I started picking up the phone and calling. And I was lucky enough. So I was lucky enough to get hired by JLL. So it was good.
Well, I love that you said, you know, some of it is early on in our work journey is taking on roles that we maybe didn't like what happened there, or we learned a lot, or we didn't like how things were done. I know that has a front end of my resume is all kinds of those, learning about things that we didn't appreciate of the culture or of the business or of the policies. And then, you know, when we get into a place of leadership, ensuring that that's not how it's going to be with our team and our team members. Let me ask you this. So JLL, you're in. What were some of the things you loved about walking into that organization? And what were some of the most challenging things you faced? And that could have been within this year, and you know, you've come through COVID as well, or it could have been like early on, but any of those, like some of the things that you're like, yeah, this is where it needs to be and best lessons. And then what were some of the things that challenge you? Those are also great lessons.
Yeah, for sure. So I'll start with the easy stuff, right? The stuff that I loved, the reason that I stayed. So global organization, and my values are very much around that global. I'm just curious about the world. So the opportunity to move around and see all these different places was unparalleled. And then I will say ethics. We do work everywhere. I've done projects in Nigeria, in India, China, all over the place. And without a doubt, we behave ethically. And that was really important to me. So those two things, I think, combined with basically people work hard, they're basically honest, everyone's got good intentions. So I think there's a lot that I really liked about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think COVID was the most challenging period, no doubt.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I'd be surprised if anyone didn't find it extraordinarily challenging.
Yeah, especially within the industry and market that you're playing in.
Yeah,
right. Absolutely. Not let alone what else was going on, right?
Yeah.
But it's challenging for real estate all over, highs and lows, right? Ups and downs, and it still is. One of the things that listeners may or may not know, but your journey at JLL will end very shortly in days, you know,
yes,
a planned departure of yourself to take some time off, enjoy your family, enjoy the world, enjoy life. Thinking about that, rolling up to Friday of this week, what are some of the things that, you know, that probably like turns out not that well, but rolling up to Friday this week, summer. What are some of your biggest takeaways from this time?
I better say, first up, the reason I'm leaving is it's really that I want to spend a bunch of time with my children.
Yeah.
And then actually support my wife too. So she works for Red Cross and she's doing some work on global migration. And that's pretty important work at this point in time. So
yes, you know,
I'm going to take on some more of the home duties and support her
awesome.
A bit. So yeah, it's a little selfish, but I think it's important. And frankly, I think it'd be great to take a step back and reevaluate life. So that's why I'm leaving.
Yeah. Well, I love it. And we talked earlier that your kids are 7 and 11, I think you said, so a great age to be able to be with them, invest in them, spend time, learn and grow and all that greatness, because you can't get that back.
No.
You know, you can't get that back. So thinking about yourself, I think that's thinking about your family and doing the right thing for everyone. So that, I think that's fantastic. When you walk away, what are the things you take with you? What are your greatest things? Because that's really when we step away, whether we sell our business, we step out of a position, it's what have we learned? What are we taking with us?
The whole tool set that I've been able to play with and develop over the years is massively valuable. A lot of it does come from metronomics and Three Hag Way or from the lean world or theory of constraints or Lean Six Sigma stuff. So just being able to run some water through the pipes with all of those, now I've got experience with them. I love that. I think the people piece, Patrick Lencioni, the work that he does, trying out his tools, fantastic. Yeah. So those are kind of the practical day-to-day things.
Yes.
What I will take away is I've been really lucky to be able to help people develop their careers and grow and introduce them to stuff that's worked for me, that can work for them. And I think the business is on a really good footing going forward because of that. So again, I just feel very lucky to have been able to work with people who've had the appetite for that and taken the risk and gone on the journey.
Right. It sounds probably crazy, I'm going to say this, but I know that you've invested time in learning. Right? Mm-hmm. Lots of time in learning. And a lot of times, no matter high growth, medium growth, it could even be slow growth, whatever path a company's on, that we don't get that opportunity to grow and apply. And I loved how you bring forward is having made an impact with your team, right? As one of those things you take away. And I know that I love, and I'm sure you have over the last 17 years, you get emails back from team members who have flown to another place, another role.
Absolutely.
And you follow them and you watch them continue to grow. It's just a fantastic feeling. When you think about building up the team and working through JLL, how did you deal with the roadmap of going forward, ensuring that with your team? And what are the things that were the most successful in sort of sharing that out? And what were things you tried that maybe didn't work? Because we've all done that.
Yeah, absolutely. What doesn't work is top down, right? You got to be building the future together.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you have to have a clear vision of what it is you stand for and what you're after as the leader. Yeah. So one of the things that I did that was quite powerful early on, within the first month of when I started in this role, I sat down and wrote out in detail a vivid vision for where I wanted to be in 3 years. And I mean vivid. So what did the office feel like? What were the kinds of meetings that we were having, and how were we getting together, and what did clients feel about us, and what kind of services were, like, really detailed?
And did you use like Cameron Harold's vivid vision?
That was the inspiration.
Great book. And Double Double's another one that Cameron Harold wrote. It's so good. So leverage that as well. I love painting that picture. Yeah, I highly recommend painting the picture.
Very good. But don't then kind of hand it down from the mountain and expect people to follow, right? So that was the inspiration, get everyone to read it. And then you start building the future together, right? So we defined what's our 3-year highly achievable goal, where do we want to be in 10 years, BHAG, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then start working backwards and what's the quarterly plan, annual, blah, blah, blah.
So I think something you said is so important that maybe, you know, it gets glossed over, is that you learned about it, vivid vision, you thought about it, which we should do as leaders, but then you didn't just say, here you go, team, off you go, let's go implement that, right? Yep. It's the thing that actually, back in the day of building my first business, I said, look, it's your vision, come up with a vision and give it to your team, right? Like, that's still my vision, not their vision. And
exactly.
We know the way you said that, then what you did is you went out and built it with the team, right? You built it up with the team, you collaborated with the team, and now it's everybody's vision and everyone gets on board with that. I love that. I'm sorry I'm stopping there, but that is like just, you know, that is the difference between what I call delegating. Right. You delegate a vision like, because you still own it. It's still yours. Or you share a vision, which is you collaborate and build it up. Beautiful. Love it. Love it. What were some of the other things you did? Like, so that's laying out where are we going? What did you do for how do I get through the next year, next quarter, and so on?
So we pretty much ran the textbook approach with 3-HAG Way, and then when Metronomics got released, kind of updated that a bit. Once we painted our 3-year vision, we did the swim lanes, we did our annual and quarterly strategy sessions, and you start thinking through, okay, so if we're going to end up here, what comes before that? What comes before that? What comes before that?
Right.
How do we go about doing it? Where are we trying to get to? Or who's our core customer and what does she want? How do we make sure that she's getting something from us that she can't get from anyone else that is uniquely valuable? And then underlying all of that was, okay, where are we at as a team? How do we feel about our performance as a team? And how do we get better working as a team? Because at the end of the day, you're all people sitting in a room, right? That's ultimately it. That was the framework we followed.
And then within that, the one thing that has been a theme throughout meeting guests all along the way, as we have, it's coming back to people, and you kicked off with people as well. When you put the framework in place, you roll this all out and you know, you pick different pieces that plug into the framework. You know, some people love it and some people don't. Some people fit it and some people don't. And some people, as we continue to grow, we actually grow out of. What was that journey like for you and your leadership team and your team as you iteratively, you stack this in, you get better and better? And what that looked like for you and your team?
Definitely some challenging conversations early on. It was a big culture shift. I will say that I'm a big believer in having data as a baseline for driving change. And so we use the 5 dysfunctions survey as a way of measuring how everyone felt. by being able to work on that, it was a little bit more objective. You know, we could say that actually trust, foundation of the pyramid, we need to do more work on that.
Yes.
So there was less, this is my opinion, this is our opinion now.
And several right. Days later. Yeah.
Yep. So there were some people who left, right?
Yeah.
You know, when you hold people to accountability and you hold them to standards of delivery, who does what by when, and not everyone's comfortable with that, and that's okay. And they've gone on to be successful elsewhere, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But yeah. Fascinating to look back and actually see some objective data that we are getting stronger as a team.
Yes. And so I'm a fan of Vibe Dysfunction's team assessment, probably been using it since it came out. And it just gives you, first time you do it, you have like a baseline and you're learning through it, but you have a baseline, you have a number, you know, right, wrong, or ugly. What it's there for is to drive the team discussion on what we agree upon and how we're going to get better. Because the cohesive system, as we know, tightly tied to the cultural system and the human system, but without it, we actually, it'll be a lot of work to yep. actually win whatever game you're playing. And we know that a team that's focused on the team result is going to get there faster. It's definitely going to get there faster. I love that you use that. With all the clients that I coach, we use that at least twice a year just to have the conversation. We originally started using it sort of a once a year, go off site, do the whole program. But we found that that was once a year. And you know, and I know that it's a continuous journey, cohesiveness. And as we add people, as people leave, our cohesive level, you know, fluctuates. And so I love that you say that you could see it, because we can see where we're going, and we kept the timing tight. So really, really happy to hear that you leverage that. That tool's been around for a long time, and it comes from Pat Lencioni's book, Overcoming the Five Dysfunctions of a Team, in case people haven't read that. I don't know too many people have read that, but there's probably some people out there. When you came in to this leadership position, maybe you don't want to answer this, but what was your biggest fear? Did you have any when you, you know, came into this managing director position?
Yeah, so I started in January 2020. So actually, my initial fear turned out to be not my biggest fear. Look, it was a new role, da, 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 all that stuff. But by March 2020, I was wondering, what is going on with the world? And do we have a future? It was an interesting time. And actually, the biggest fear was personally, right? Yes. Global pandemic. And then for all my team and all my clients, what are they all going through? It was a difficult time.
Yeah, absolutely. The big thing at that time was first understanding what was going on. Mm-hmm. Second thing was understanding, as everyone did, you got to go to yourself and your family. Then you go to team. As leaders, we all went to team. And then we go to our clients and customers and so on. Quite a tumultuous time, there's no doubt. When you think about that time, like 2020, and you look back at it now, and we know what it is, we know what it still is. Yep. You know, what's the thing you're most proud of that you accomplished in that time with your team and your company?
Yeah, I think I feel very proud of the fact that I had access to the tool set to help us get through it pretty successfully. So for example, I'd already introduced huddles, but I hadn't pushed them out aggressively throughout the business, right? So we've got about in my team, about seven layers, about 1,100, 1,200 people.
Yes.
And so I really put pedal down to pushing out those daily huddles to keep people connected, even though they were separate. And I think that really helped. And I had the confidence, having rolled them out before, to do that. So just having that suite of tools available that I was then able to draw on, that I'm pretty proud of. Then in terms of clients, we represent some of the largest organizations on earth, right? So it's not that we are able to go to clients and say, here is what you should do, but we are able to present research and findings and insights and say, look, this is what all these different industries have tried. These folks said this worked. These folks said that didn't.
Yeah.
Da, da, da. So we're able to help narrow the cone of uncertainty for our clients and help them navigate a little bit faster with a little bit more certainty.
Yeah.
There was still more than enough uncertainty to go around, but at least we helped a little.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. I felt the same way with my clients What can we do to give some feel that there's a foundation underneath and that we're helping, right? That we took the time to learn and understand and then give back options that each of our clients were a little bit different, as I'm sure yours were, depending on where they were in the world, what, you know, probably wave they were in. And in the beginning, it was all just one big wave, you know, and then the waves sort of come across the world. What kind of advice, knowing or the external environment we play in, definitely, no matter what business you're in, puts pressure on our business. COVID was a very extraordinary one because it put pressure on all the businesses around the world. Some put pressure of very high growth. Some people go, oh, that'd be so great. Oh, I can tell you, I had some clients who went through that. It was a ride. And some, you know, that pressure put it on all the way to almost a shutdown for a very long time and trying to figure out how do we get to the other side. What kind of advice can you give to other leaders when you're thinking about the external pressures that we get on business? And you've had not only a pandemic in your career, you've had lots of things, as I have too, looking back over the years. What's some advice you could give to others thinking about external pressures to a business?
The basic rhythm of getting out and exploring the world around you and asking questions about it is even more critical in a time when the world is changing faster. Yes. So that will look like asking more questions, providing less answers, listening a little harder, generally just trying to get out and figure out what is changing and when and how, a little bit more of a structured way, and then internally sharing that and making sure it's visible and transparent so that you're as much as possible all working from the same view of reality. Yeah. It's never 100%. But if you've all got the basic same understanding, then that helps a lot.
Yeah, I love that because a lot of times as leaders, we're going really fast and we do go out and do that homework and we do that research and we ask a lot of questions. And then at times we forget, we need to bring it back internally. It's one of the things that I think the communication framework within Metronomics, right, they grew up out of Rockefeller Habits way back in the day, over 22 years ago, something like that, I guess, easily that, gave that structure, right, that internal communication structure that wasn't the leader saying it all out loud all the time. It was being able to cascade it out through the team and also getting the feedback back, right? So that was partly the second question, which you answered is, you know, then how do you share that internally? How do you take the reaction to that internally? You know, one of the things you said earlier, you know, the huddle rhythm got pushed out a little faster. You went, you know, a little stronger on that. We had teams that huddled twice a day. They huddled in the morning when they kicked off the day, and they huddled in the evening all together. And it was all hands on deck for some of those companies. And it was just the rhythm of it. You know, that's the idea behind the metronome, as you know. It's about a rhythm, and the leaders set the rhythm, good times and bad times.
Absolutely.
What do you think every leader should start doing? Now, that's a big, broad question, but in your own opinion, based upon where we are today, right? COVID's still out there. And this thinking about, you know, it affected all businesses, global or not. What do you think every leader should start doing? What would you give? What advice would you give to leaders listening?
I'm going to come back to something that we talked about earlier. I think just the power of asking questions. And I include myself in this. Ask more questions. Mm-hmm. Give less answers. Yeah. It's so powerful. It's how change happens. It's just critical.
Yeah, I love that. That's such a simple answer, but really powerful. It's probably one of the biggest TSN turning points in my own leadership career was, you know, my coach telling me, stop answering the questions. Just ask more questions. And one of the biggest questions, and I know because you've read Metronomics and know Metronomics, is what do you recommend? Is one of my favorite questions because normally your team knows the answer. They usually know it better than we do, for sure. Give me your advice on what do you think leaders should stop doing? Maybe it's the opposite of the last one, but.
In terms of what people need to, or leaders need to stop doing, mm-hmm. the analogy that I love is when you've got the pyramid and you imagine you're a leader and you're top of this pyramid, that actually that's the wrong analogy. You need to stop thinking like that. You turn it upside down. What you're really trying to do is reach from the bottom up and reach everyone right through to your clients or your customers and provide as much service as you can to those folks. It's not about leading and having followers. It's about providing service and moving up through the organization that way.
Love that. Love that. Yeah, couldn't agree more with that. What's one piece of technology, software that has made your working life easier, more efficient? What's your favorite piece of tech?
So I'm going to give two, actually. Okay. So I will give a shout out to Metronome because it's been fantastic for us.
Yeah, okay, thank you. I love it.
We do use that. just having everything in one place and the software instantiates the process, right? So it's fantastic. Yes. The other one, which is a little more personal, but it's made me not more efficient but more effective, is a website called readwise.io, or an app. And what it does is it takes your highlights from your Kindle books or your Libby books or whatever, and it brings up spaced sequence, kind of 5 or 10 of them each day. And you just review those 5 or 10 quotes that you highlighted in the past. And so it reminds you of all these deep insights that you read 3 months ago and you've totally forgotten. Yeah. And it's made me more effective because suddenly I've got some of the great minds of history popping up in my feed each morning.
Yeah.
So and I it's definitely recommend that.
Readwise.io.
Exactly.
Readwise.io. That's a new one for me. I have to check it out because that's awesome, because you do all that work when you're reading. You do highlight. It's actually why I read books over and over again. But that sounds like maybe I don't have to.
Exactly. It's great.
If you had one piece of advice to give other leaders who are finding themselves, their company's stuck, they're just at the beginning of a growth journey, or they're deep in it, what would it be? What advice would you give them?
It's not about you. There's a peer group out there that you can find who solved these problems before. Mm. So go out and find them. So join a Vistage or Tech or YPO or something like that. Get a coach. Share the burden. It really helps a lot.
Oh, I love that. Okay, one last easy question before we wrap this up. What book are you currently reading? I ask this of people everywhere because I love to read books, and I always find my next book by asking. But so selfishly, I'm asking for me, but I'm sure other readers will love that too, other listeners. What book are you currently reading?
I got two on the go at the moment. So one's business book. So I'm going back and rereading Warren Buffett's Letters to Shareholders, particularly the ones from the 70s and 80s, right? Because that was a major period of inflation. His writing so concise and clear. I think there's a lot of wisdom there for us. And the other one is The Lincoln Highway by, I think it's Amon Towles. It's a historical fiction set in the 50s in the US. It's great. Great writing.
Love it. Love it. Well, that's amazing. Amazing feedback. Thank you. A lot of the speed round of questions were excellent. I want to thank you for your time today. I want to thank you for really being a user of the methodology, because the more we have, the better it gets through the feedback and the learnings and all of that. And I wish you a great time off, time for you and time for you and your family. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Thanks, Shen.
You're welcome. Tip Top is brought to you by Metronomics. To find out more about Metronomics and how this 20-plus year-old proven system will save you time and money as you grow up your business, visit metronomics.com. That's metronomics.com. Also, search for Metronomics in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found.